Hello and welcome to the Oldie podcast with me, Harry Mount, editor of the Oldie. And we've got a terrific piece in this month's issue by Dominic Green, who's talking about having a suit made, but even more excitingly, a suit made by Chris Kerr, who has been making the costumes for the new Downton Abbey film out on September the 13th. So, Dominic, I believe very excitingly, you had some clothes made out of the same material used for Mr. Bates the valet, is that right?
Harry, yes, that is true. I went to Chris's shop, which is in Berwick Street in Soho, and I saw a pile of photographs of various members of the Downton Abbey cast, and it emerged that he had been handling some traditionally made very heavy cloths, making the costumes for the film. And there was the fabric, a little small leftover from the presumably vast amount of fabric involved in making trousers for Mr. Bates, the valet.
And you had some suit, trousers?
I had some trousers made up in the style of Mr. Bates, yes.
Right. And you end up looking like an Edwardian valet or...
I do feel like one, yes. Right. I am my own valet, in fact, yes.
And you are... How old are you, Dominic?
I am 49.
So 49, and yet for a long time you've been very interested in tailored suits. And in your marvellous piece you describe, it goes back to your... Grandfather, was he a tailor?
Yes, he was. He was a terrible tailor, though. Right. But his father, my great-grandfather, was a very good one. All of my family are Jewish immigrants, and most of them tailors, and a couple of other artisans, like diamond cutters, but essentially tailors. And my great-grandfather was a master tailor, which meant he forced his sons to work for him in the family business. And they set up in Fitzrovia, which is very near the Oldie offices, in fact. And that neighbourhood still has showrooms and workshops even left over from when it was the West End's garment district, in effect. But they also took in a lot of work from Savile Row, because the secret, as it were, of Savile Row is that not all the work is done in Savile Row. The cutting will be done by a Savile Row operation, but then things will be sent out to be assembled, especially the parts of the suit that you don't see, the interior workings often.
Which, what sort of bits? There's some very good photos in the article of Chris Kerr working on all the various patterns. So there are dozens of different parts to a suit, is that right?
There is, yes. And it begins, of course, after measurement, with the cutting of paper before cloth. The pieces are like a jigsaw. The major structural elements are cut out in paper, and then the cloth is cut from that. And it, according to Chris, who knows these things far better than I do, this is the crucial stage. It's like the brush of the artist. It's that once the cloth is cut, there is no way back, really. And of course, there are stages and other people working on it and so on, but it's the initial handling of the cloth and the way that it's worked that determine how well the suit will hang.
And for this article, you went to have a new suit made, but you refer to a beautiful suit made 20 years ago, which...
Yes.
With all due respect, doesn't fit so well now. You're extremely trim, I must say.
I was trimmer in that case. I mean, part of the reason that I became interested in this is because I could never fit in anything anyway, even in my younger, svelter days, that came off the peck. I was either too short or too long or too broad, or my arms were the wrong length, and I never felt comfortable in it and always looked messy, and so I had no choice in a sense. And when I got married, of course, I went to Chris's father, Mr.
Eddie. 20 years ago.
20 years ago, yes. Mr. Eddie, as he was known, Eddie Kerr, who was a 60s showbiz legendary tailor who had made suits for Matt Monroe and Procol Harum, and also for the chimpanzees in the famous PG Tips TV adverts. And so, of course, he had no problem fitting me into a suit. And I think mine was one of the first that Chris cut, a very early Chris Kerr, and it was lovely. But I wore it a great deal, and I wore it playing music, and it gradually got crushed, and then bits of it started no longer to fit me, and then we ran out of cloth to expand with. And eventually it looked like I'd been run over in it. And it was time, I thought, after being married 20 years, if my wife wasn't going to replace me, I could at least replace the suit.
Very good. And I remember a line somebody once said is that you never regret spending too much on something that's fantastic, and you always regret spending too little on something that's substandard. I've had a couple of suits tailored over the years, and just like with you, they fell apart because I wore them so much. And there really is something different about the look and also how it feels on you, isn't that right?
It is. And I think if you were to look at a moderately expensive shop now and buy something off the peg, you could spend £300 to £500, but the thing would disintegrate maybe in 1 or 2 years. It simply wouldn't last, let alone accommodate any changes in physique, let alone fit you that well to start with. While you could spend twice as much or even four times as much and have a suit that will work for 20 years and that will fit you to start with and will probably fit you to end with and probably will look quite good when they lay you out,
right,
should you not outlast the suit.
And can be altered as well.
And can be as well. There's always an extra cloth tucked away around the waist, yes.
And there are different levels, aren't there? There's made to measure. Can you explain what made to measure means?
Well, made to measure is an innovation which falls in between buying something which has been made by a machine, buying something which is completely handmade. In that made to measure, you are measured and then the thing is dispatched and made, as it were, from the cut cloth. However, some parts of it are machine made. Nothing is glued. If you go to the high street and buy a suit, a lot of it will be fused or glued. The stitching will be purely cosmetic. It's not like that at all. On the other hand, the invisible parts of the suit will be machine-made. But personally speaking, I can live with that.
And your new one was made to measure, or it's the next?
It was made to measure, right. Yes.
And the next one above it is
would
called?
Be bespoke, where everything is handmade, hand-cut, hand-sewn. And, of course, the number of hours involved is going to be 2 to 3 times greater. And the number of workers involved as well is going to multiply.
And are you able to give an idea of cost for the two different suits?
Yes, Chris's suits are $1,200 is the usual point for made to measure, and $2,400 for bespoke.
Right.
But of course, there are going to be variations if you want waistcoats or if you want a particularly good cloth or something.
And if we look at Downton Abbey, for which Chris has also made the suits or the costumes, seems to me, as an old fogey, that standards of British clothes have massively collapsed, or Western clothes, in the last century. Would you know, 50 years probably, would you agree?
Yeah, I would, in that it's now perfectly acceptable to walk around in your pyjamas and a pair of flip-flops, which even 20 years ago would have marked someone out as an escapee from a mental asylum.
Yeah.
And it's now considered perfectly acceptable workwear. And one of the most interesting things, of course, about the Downton outfits, and indeed clothing from that period, is how heavy it is by comparison. About 15 years ago, I was living in Sweden for a while, and I went to Chris and said, can you make me a warm suit, tweed suit? And he made it 12, 13-ounce Harris tweed, which is, by contemporary standards, very, very thick and heavy. And I can't actually wear it in the United States where I live, because all of the buildings are heated or cooled to 72 Fahrenheit. And if you wear 12-ounce tweed three-piece in that temperature, you'll actually become dizzy and expire. The Downton fabrics are up to 20, 24 ounces. They're enormously thick and heavy because you're wearing your own heating, in effect.
And that applied to the trousers you had made, isn't it?
These were lighter. These were like a stunt Edwardian pair, really, in that they weren't as heavy as the originals. But they were heavier than, say, if you were to go to Moss Bros and get a pair of morning suit trousers. They would be papery by comparison to the ones that the Edwardians would have had.
And the suit itself as an institution is an extraordinary thing. A friend of mine was once teased by another friend who said the British have no national dress, and he said to this friend, who I think was French, he said, yes we do, and you're wearing it. It was a suit, and the suits in Downton Abbey, and I'm a bit of an obsessive for the old three-button suits, but I may be getting a bit too foguish, insisting on three buttons, but the suits in Downton Abbey from the late 19th century into the 20s and 30s and up to today, they don't change that much, do they?
No, they don't. And it is true that wherever you go, the world's business outfit is a suit without much variation on it. And that is an English innovation. I'm sorry, I forgot where we were. You're going to have
how much the suit has changed
late
19th century to now.
Yes.
Barely at all, really, isn't it?
It's hardly changed at all, is the other thing. That if you look at Edwardian fashion, that's pretty much the template for what became mod fashion, and pretty much goes unchanged with inflation and deflation of lapels and ankles and pockets.
Yeah. There are tiny differences which seem enormous to you and I.
Four buttons versus three, or three versus two, or the rollover third button, which marks Cary Grant's outfit, in North by Northwest. These are minutiae, but essentially the template is set in the late 1800s, early 1900s.
And where do you stand on the big question of the day, three buttons or two buttons?
Three. Sometimes, always, never, firstly. And the three buttons... Sometimes, always, never is the way of remembering which buttons you should do up. That if you do the bottom button up as well as the other two, you'll look like you're trapped in a cylinder of cloth. And if you do the top one up and you try and sit down, you look like you're falling forward inside it. But the middle button is designed to hold the two parts of the coat together without damaging the way the cloth falls. The Americans, of course, go for the two button. It's more slimming, and that's perhaps why they go for it. We are two peoples, divided by a common outfit. When it comes to that. But I think the three button also offers more chance for the tailor to show his stuff, because it's the usual trade-off between form and content. The more demanding the form, the more subtle the changes of content have to be to really show the style. And because the three button looks more formal than the two button, the tailor has less space to work with when it comes to the lapels.
Right.
For instance.
And sorry, explain the sometimes, always, never more openly.
Sometimes, always, never is the code for remembering which buttons on a three-button suit should be used and how they should be used. The middle button is always. Otherwise, you're flapping about and so on. The top button is sometimes. You know, in inclement weather, for instance, you may need to deploy the top button. But the bottom button is never. In particular, because when you stand up, you'll look like you're trapped in a cylinder of cloth. And if you sit down, the whole thing will bunch up and your shoulders of your jacket will suddenly be somewhere around your ears.
And we'll finish on another very important question. vent at the back or single slit?
I am of the opinion that a single vent is for horse riding, and that the double vent is the only way to go. But I know this is a controversial point.
Because double vent, what's the advantage of it?
It has a certain slimming effect on your profile, put it that way. And we don't see ourselves from behind, but the double vent smooths out the line, shall we say.
That's an extremely good place to stop. And I'm very grateful to Dominic Green for his fantastic article in this month's Aldi and for his Aldi podcast. Thanks so much, Dominic.
Thank you.